Now, God willing, we shall conclude Matthew
14 today. You'll be pleased to know. So we are making a small progress, but it's wonderful that we can just spend this time together in God's precious word. Now, as we come to this again, like last Sunday morning, a very familiar passage, our verse really that will help us to see and understand the flow of the text and to help us understand the bigger picture that Matthew is conveying to us is verse 33. I'll read it for you. So we're in Matthew chapter 14, verse 33. And those in the boat worshipped him, saying, "Truly, you are the Son of God." Now, last Sunday morning, we looked at the question, what did people see in him? And some saw that he was a prophet. And we dipped in and out of the other gospel writers. We went to John 6 primarily. And we saw that some said, yeah, he is the prophet. Others said, well, if he is the prophet, then why don't we make him king? If he is the one that has come to make a difference to us and to Israel, then let's crown him king now. And they tried to take him by force. What did they see in him? Well, clearly, through this next event that is recorded for us here in Matthew 14, that the conclusion of the disciples was this: truly, you are, concerning Jesus, truly, you are the Son of God. And they worshipped him, verse 33, knowing he was the Son of God. And yet, the narrative before us explains to us on what basis they concluded that he was the Son of God. Now, often we say about the disciples that they weren't the brightest, that they weren't the sharpest knives in the drawer, okay? But that's okay, because when I see their responses to Jesus' teachings and to his miracles, I see myself. So I think, well, yeah, actually, the beauty of these disciples is that they're like us. They're like us. And sometimes, and particularly when it comes to spiritual truth, sometimes we just can't see it. It needs the Spirit of God to come and show us. And I don't care whether you've been a Christian for 40 or 50 years, you are still reliant on the Spirit of God to grant you understanding of his word. And we're still learning. And we're still growing. And we're still exploring. And we're still discovering more and more about who Jesus is. But surely, truly, they say, as they worshipped him in the boat, you are the Son of God. Now, I have five things taken from this narrative that is the basis of them concluding he is the Son of God. So here's the first one. They worshipped him knowing he was the Son of God on the basis of his divine authority. So if you take your notes, that's your first point, divine authority. And when you get to number five, and the fifth one's really short, so when we get to the fifth point, you think, great, we're doing so well, okay? Divine authority. Throughout this passage, we see that Jesus has authority over everybody, over everyone, and over everything. And you can read it and miss it. Let me show you. Following the feeding of the 5,000 of men, besides women and children, look at verse 22. Immediately, with haste, he made the disciples get into the boat. He constrained them, it says in some translations, to get into the boat, to go before him to the other side, whilst he remained and dismissed the crowds. Here he shows something of his authority over everyone and everything. And so the disciples, they get into the boat. They show obedience. Maybe they just wanted to stay with Jesus, but they've understood, they've been with Jesus long enough now to know that if Jesus says go, they should go. And so he has authority over everything. But we've seen already in Matthew 7 and verse 29, I think it is, that he taught people, said he taught as one having authority. He wasn't just like the other human teachers of the day. He wasn't just like the other rabbis. He stood out. He was head and shoulders above the other teachers of their day. There was something unique. There was something distinct. There was something different about Jesus. Why? Because he taught as one having authority. There were times when his authority was questioned. The Jews, I think Mark tells us that the Jews, Mark 11, 27, that the Jews questioned his authority. By what authority do you do these things? And so here we see, in this account, something of his divine authority. That he has all authority. Matthew 28 reminds us that Jesus himself said, all authority has been given to me in heaven and on earth. He has the authority because he is God. There is divine authority. And so what he says, he speaks with authority. What he does with authority. You know, I've told you the story about when the chief constable of Greater Manchester Police, he gave the go-ahead for the army bomb disposal unit to blow up my car. And I was livid. I was really livid. It wasn't a very gracious response in that moment. And I remember saying, you know, who gave you the authority to blow up my car? He says, I have both the power and the authority to blow up your car. He's a tall man, quite imposing. And I went, oh, fair enough. I thought, you don't want to get on the wrong side of the police, do you? Well, fair enough. Jesus showed by what he said and he did that he had authority, but it was divine authority. So when Jesus commands you today, when he commands me today, when he commands us as a church today, God is speaking. And when he speaks, we listen. Because he speaks with authority. And he wants what is best for his children. And so divine authority. They realized that he had divine authority. Because as soon as they got into the boat, look at verse 32, the wind ceased. And they worshipped him. He had authority over everyone and everything. He has authority over you and me and us today. He has authority over everyone and everything. And that's not just for us, that's for the whole world. He is the Son, the eternal Son of God. Or you could say he is God, the Son. The second basis for why they worshipped him, realizing he was the Son of God, was this. Not just divine authority. Look at verse 24. That is divine knowledge. And now after he dismissed the crowds, verse 23, he went up on a mountain by himself to pray. When evening came, he was there alone. Where was the boat? It was a long way from the land, beaten by the waves, for the wind was against them. But he was aware of the storm. Why? Because he is the one who has authority over the storms, over the elements. And in the fourth watch of the night, he came to them, walking on the sea. Divine knowledge. He knew their predicament. He knew their hearts were gripped with fear because he has divine knowledge. He knows everything. Did you notice there that Gareth, in those verses he shared with the children, I've already quoted one of those verses from Matthew 28. He also quoted Psalm 139, if you were watching the slide carefully. Oh Lord, you have searched me and have known me. You know when I sit down and you know when I get up or rise up. You discern my thoughts from afar. You search out my path and my lying down. You are acquainted with all my ways. Even before a word is on my tongue, behold, O Lord, you know it altogether. Such knowledge is too wonderful for me. It is too high. I cannot attain it. He has divine knowledge. And the boat is probably some 4 miles in the midst of the Sea of Galilee. And yet, even though the disciples in that boat are being buffeted and battered by the elements, they are still secure. They may not feel secure, but they are secure. They're secured by the fact that he has divine authority and he has divine knowledge. You might be in a storm today. If you're not in a storm, you may be going into a storm or you may be coming out of a storm. But let me tell you this, that throughout life, there are times and those moments, and many of you can testify to this. So I'm not teaching you something you don't already know, that there are times when throughout life, we are buffeted and we are battered. And yet in the eye of the storm, even though you're buffeted and battered, you are secure. You are secure. You may not feel secure, but you are secure. That's what we see here in this narrative. He knows. It's not like the angels report to the Lord in heaven and saying, are you aware what's going on in Andy's life? Are you aware of the predicament they have in the Jones household or the Williams household? He doesn't need angels whom he created to inform him of all that's going on in your life today. He knows. And whatever you're going through, you are secure. Even if it's painful, even if it can at times be disconcerting, it can be discouraging, it can be hard, you are secure. Because those who know this Christ in a personal and intimate way are secure. That when we came to place our trust in him by faith, that he secures us forever. We have, this morning, we have the hope of eternal salvation. We are eternally secure. And so there's divine authority and there's divine knowledge. And so they worshipped him, knowing that he was the Son of God, on the basis of his divine authority and knowledge. But thirdly, they worshipped him on the basis that he is the Son of God, knowing something of his divine protection or his care. Look at verse 26. When the disciples saw him walking on the sea, they were terrified and they said, "It is a ghost." And they cried in fear. But immediately Jesus spoke to them, saying, "Take heart, it is I. Do not be afraid." This is the fourth watch, we're told, verse 25, of the night. That means that this is taking place between 3 a.m. in the morning and 6 a.m. See, so the watches, 6 p.m. to 9 p.m., 9 p.m. to midnight, midnight to 3 a.m. This is the fourth watch. This is between 3 a.m. and 6 a.m. So they have been on this familiar body of water that many of those disciples knew, like the back of their hand, because some of them were experienced fishermen. They've been toiling for many hours, 6, 7, possibly 8 hours. And they still weren't accomplishing or achieving what they wanted to accomplish. They were heading for Capernaum on the other side of the Sea of Galilee. And so he came to them. This is his divine care, his divine protection. They were afraid, but he speaks to them. Look at verse 27. He spoke to them saying, "Take heart, it is I." And if you're in a storm this morning, I want you to hear, as we read this passage, I want you to hear the voice of Jesus. He says to you, in all your uncertainty, in all your anxiety, in all your pain and sorrow and distress, he speaks to you. It is I. I have come to you. I am with you. I stand amongst you. Do not be afraid. Why? Because I have divine authority. I have divine knowledge. And also, I have divine protection. I care for you. He didn't just come to these disciples in the storm. He came to them on the storm. Do you see his authority? He uses their trial as a pathway into their circumstance. I'll say that again. He uses their trial as a pathway into their circumstance. And so whatever trial you're going through, or have been through, or will go through, remember this, that he has divine protection of you. That doesn't mean that he will heal you. Sometimes it's his will to say, your time here on earth has come to an end. You have accomplished for me all that I ordained. Now, come home. Come home. And the moment that he calls us to himself is the moment that he had planned for before he even created this world. There's no such thing as chance or coincidence or luck. Everything that happens in your life and in my life is under his divine authority, his divine knowledge, and our lives are under his divine care and protection. You need to understand that. And so when you wake up in the morning, if God grants us a morning, each morning, the first thing we should say is, Lord, thank you for giving me another day to serve you. Another day to live for you. Another day to honor you. Another day to glorify you. Another day that my life might be seen as an act of worship for you, for your honor and glory and for your name's sake. That he gives us life, physical and spiritual, in order for us to know him and to love him and to serve him. But it's reassuring to know of his divine care for you and for me. Do not be afraid, it is I. Now, verse 28 is quite a fascinating verse, which brings us to our fourth point, something of his divine love. They worshipped him knowing that he was the Son of God on the basis of his divine authority, his divine knowledge, his divine protection, and fourthly, his divine love. Look at verse 28. And Peter answered him, Lord, if it is you, command me to come to you on the water. Now, I often think, what in the world motivated Peter to say that? What in the world? And the commentators, they come up with their reasons. And some of them are a little bit silly, really. And some say, oh, well, this is typical of Peter. And I think in some of the reasons that the commentators give are actually doing Peter a disservice here. So I'm going to stick up for Peter. Okay? I think it's not part of his character and just how he was. We talk about Peter's character, don't we? That He was the first to sort of dive in. He would speak before he engaged his brain and all that sort of stuff. Impetuous, we often say, of Peter. But I think there's something far more significant and deeper here that we overlook as we read this narrative together. Lord, if it is you, command me to come to you on the water. Why? Now listen, you may have some deeper and greater insight into this than me. And if you have, then come and share it. Incidentally, I'm so encouraged when people do share things. I had a lovely text last night about last Sunday's ministry. I think that's great, isn't it? People are thinking and responding to what God is saying. Anyhow, I think it's this. That in that moment, Peter longed to be where Jesus is. In that moment, he just longed to be where Jesus is. He wants to be as close as he can to Jesus. Because when he's close to Jesus and when he's where Jesus is, he feels safe. He feels secure. He feels loved. Do you long to be where Jesus is? Do you long to know more of his presence day by day? Of course, his spirit, the living breath of God, is in us. His spirit lives in us. And so wherever I am, he is with me. Whatever I do, he is there, ready at hand. I know, but I don't always sense it. See, we know the theology. We know the truth. Because God's word teaches us that his spirit indwells the heart of each believer. The spirit of the risen Christ lives in my heart, in your heart, if you're a Christian today. We know that to be true, but we don't always sense it. In that moment, he wanted to be where Jesus was because he felt secure, safe, and loved. And Jesus, who with his divine knowledge says to Peter, come. One word, come. Come to me. It's exciting, isn't it? Please don't be embarrassed. It happened to me once, years ago. And I made the fatal error that I was doing this. And then everyone knew it was me. What you need to do, poker face. Just don't flinch. And no one will ever know. Well, apart from Jesus, because he knows all things. But there we are. He felt secure when he's close to Jesus. And Jesus says one word, come. And he says to us today, as Christians, come. See, often we can preach this passage and make it evangelistic. If you're not a Christian, Jesus says, come. But in the narrative, these are men of faith. They're believers. They worshipped him because they realized he was the Son of God. If you're a true worshipper this morning, you're a Christian. And yet in that moment, you're in the eye of the storm, you say, Lord, if it's you, may I come and just kneel at your feet where I feel safe and secure, where I feel loved, that I can worship you. And listen to what he says. Come. Come to me. Come as you are. Come in your folly. Come in your disappointments. Come in your anxiety. Come. Of course, it is true to say that as Jesus got out of the boat, he is exercising faith in Jesus, isn't he? And as he approaches Jesus, he too, Peter now, is walking on the water. It says there, verse 29. And he came to Jesus. For Peter to know that Christ is able to enable him to come to him, that Peter had faith in Christ that he would, because of his divine authority over everything and everyone, because of his divine protection and his divine love and his divine knowledge, that Peter just got out the boat, trusting by faith in Jesus. And if we really want to know the nearness of Jesus, we really want to know what God is able to do for us because of who he is, we have to get out of the boat. The problem for many of us is that the boat becomes our security. Even though we're in the storm, the boat becomes our security. Whereas the boat is never our security. Christ is always our security. Quite challenging, isn't it? And then notice here, he prayed a short prayer. Lord, save me. Why was he beginning to sink? I'll tell you why. Because he became aware of the winds and the waves. He became aware of his circumstances. What had he done? He had momentarily taken his eyes off Jesus. I do it all the time. And in that moment, you take your eyes off Jesus. Do you know what happens? We begin to sink. And we begin to sink in despair and despondency. We begin to sink in the things that actually Gareth shared with the children today. The devil, the enemy, will come along and say, you see, who are you? Does God really care about you? Does anyone really care about you? And all of a sudden, because we've taken our eyes off the Lord Jesus Christ, who is our hope, who is our deliverer, who is our security, we begin to sink. We become aware of circumstances. We become aware of the obstacles and the barriers and the limitations, our own personal limitations. And we quickly sink in our despondency, in our disobedience and sin. Immediately Jesus reached out. Because of his love, his divine love, he reaches out. He takes him by the hand. He took a hold of him, saying, and I can just hear Jesus saying this now. It's a gracious little rebuke. You see, there's a rebuke, isn't there? Tone of voice is everything. And I can hear the tone of Jesus' voice here. He reaches out and he takes a hold of him. He says, oh, why are you a little faith? You didn't need to doubt. It wasn't like, oh, you still have no faith, or you still messing up. Oh, no, you can just read it. And that's the beauty of going through a book like Matthew and going through it. Because we can discern the times when Jesus speaks sternly, when he rebukes sternly. But there are times we can hear his voice saying, oh, you have little doubt, of little faith. Why did you doubt? And when they got into the boat, the wind ceased. And those in the boat worshipped him, saying, truly you are the Son of God. It became calm, because only Jesus is able to bring peace. Because of his divine authority, because of his divine knowledge, because of his divine care and protection, because of his divine love. The fifth one is this, And it's short, very short. We clearly see here something of his divine power expressed all the way through. His power expressed. And as we come to the Lord's table this morning, when with the eye of faith we look away to Calvary, we are reminded God's authority over sin and death, God's authority over knowing that we need a Saviour, God's mighty power in providing a way because of his immense love. And we see at the cross something of his power being expressed for you and for me. Only Jesus is able to conquer sin and death, because he is the Son of the living God. And so this morning, in your storms, in your trials, in your tribulations, in your anxiety, in your fears, remember that Jesus is nearby. He's praying for you. He was nearby. He was on a mountain. The Sea of Galilee is about 700 feet below sea level. He was on a mountain, and the mountains surrounding the Sea of Galilee are about 2,000 feet above sea level. So he was nearby, but he was high and lifted up. But he knew, and he saw, and he may be in heaven today, seated at the right hand of the Father. He's high and lifted up in that sense, but he sees and he knows. And he's ready to draw near. And he's praying for you in your boat, in your storm. And he says, don't be afraid. It is I. Come to me. Come as you are. Come to the place where you'll feel safe and secure, where you'll be loved and valued. Not just for time, but for eternity. And when we come to him, and when we encounter him, there is always peace. There may be a war raging outside, but when we come to him, there's always a peace in our hearts, because we are secure in him forever. We're going to sing as we come to the Lord.